Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm John Norman and this week bringing you an exclusive interview with one of the greats of West Indies cricket, one of the greats of any cricket.
And here's Locke's first ball from Hall. And
a bit! A man who took 192 wickets in 48 test matches, a man who claimed the West Indies' first test hat-trick back in 1959, and a man who has been inducted into the ICC Hall of Fame.
Tail ender Wesley Hall carries on the good work when he drives Davidson wide a bit on. Looks a certain four.
Over the next hour, we'll bring you a special episode of the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 as our West Indies commentator Barry Wilkinson sits down with the great Sir Wes Hall.
All right, what a pleasure it is to be talking to Revert Sir Wes Hall, right here at his home, looking as young as ever. Sir Wes, it's so good to see you. We're here, of course, to talk, first of all, a little bit about a very big event that you're going to be celebrating very soon. Some might say it's overdue, but you're going to be having your statue unveiled at Kensington Oval. How do you feel about such a thing happening, and it's going to be going right next to another great man who used to bowl with at Kensington Oval, the right excellence of Gary Sobers. How do you feel about that?
You know, it's Barry, I can hardly tell you, simply because as a youngster, you know, you want to play. Two things I wanted when I was 8 years old, and that was going to Connemara because I liked the cricket system, and also playing for the West Indies. And people always criticize me and say, why do you West Indies say Barbados? And I said, well, look, I mean, if you play for the West Indies, it's obvious that you play for Barbados. But if you play for Barbados, it did not mean you had to play for
the
West Indies.
That's a very good way of looking at it.
I tell you, I was very loquacious, though, in those days. You would probably say, no, I still am.
You still are.
But, you know, the point is that you cannot plan in your life for having a stature. I mean, you could plan many things. You could, could hope to be an artist, you could hope to be a footballer, a Usain Bolt or something like that. All those are things that young people would aspire to be. But to, see a stature, I don't think you will ever, it has never really come across my mind. But it's humbling, and it's, I'm surprised, to be honest with you. But I would say that I when I look around and see the great players that we have had in Barbados.
Laker, hit for four by Worrell.
Smith to Walker.
Oh, he's hit him in the air, and it's just wide of Dick Richardson.
Statham to Weeks.
Oh, tremendous hit.
The three W's for sure, Gordon and Desi and Big Bird and Seymour, all these fellows, they're real icons. So that, when you are given an award like that, you tend to look around and see who are the people who help you to be what you are. And you think, well, it's for all of us. And you say to yourself, well, the time will come when the others will be in the same bracket. And, you know, that helps you a lot, because you'll never really understand. Because you see, if you go around thinking that it must happen to you, when there are other people vying for the same spot, well, then you might be very disappointed. So the best thing to do is to be cool, and if it comes, thank God, you know, from whom all blessings flow.
So Gary seems to have just been calling you.
Beautiful shot by Gary Sobers. Really picked that up and clipped it away through mid-wicket.
And it takes Gary Sobers up to 115.
I want to talk a little bit about him. You guys played at Kensington together. You bowled in a test match. I think it was 58. Might have been when West Indies played England. I think you bowled from one end. He bowled from the other. What was it like playing cricket with such a great figure? And I mean, it would have been early days. You might not know how he would have ended his career. But what was it like playing with Sir Gary Sobers?
Well, it was great because, you know, I met Sir Gary 72 years ago. I played a match for St. Giles in 1948, and he was at Bay Street. But he was already a star. Not really a batting star, but he was a bowling star. His brother, Gerald, was a batting star. And so, you know, going through the years and playing with him, I played 48 test matches, and I had 44 successive matches with him in the team. And I think it was really educational. So he was such a great player. I remember in 1962, I was voted the fastest bowler in the world and the number one bowler in the world. And in that very year, I was playing for Queensland and he was playing for South Australia. And they were playing at our home ground, the Gabba. And he came out and the first ball he got, he edged it in the slips to me and I dropped it. And he said, Blues, what's the time? And I said, he said, what time is it? And I look at him and I said, well, if I could see, do you think you'll be still batting? You know, he says, no, man, tell me, clock is over there. Tell me what the time. I says, 11:30. He said, oh, well, I'll bat then until 11:30 tomorrow. Let me tell you, it is true that that prophecy did not really happen, because he got out about, I think, 5 minutes before the end of play, but he was 196. Whoa. So I bowled a ball, a very fast ball in the 6 meter zone, you know, flying up and things like that. And he was back in his crease very quickly and hit it over mid-wicket. Barry, I did not say I hit it over back to square. He hit it over mid-wicket for six, down the gas station or something like that. It was amazing. And do you know that I was perplexed, really. It had never happened to me before.
Whoa.
And it hadn't, and it hadn't happened since. I tell you, that evening I said, well, let's have some dinner. And I said, no, Sobi, what is all this? I mean, people hit me backwards, backwards square leg. I'm not even forward, but you're hitting me through mid-wicket. I mean, I think that is nearly impossible to a fast bowler. You know, that is supposed to be the fastest in the world. And he said, listen, people don't understand this, Wes, but if you bowl, man, at the moment of your delivery, if your hand is in the vertical, that ball is up to me. If it's forward or vertical, it could only be short. So from the minute I see you with your hand there, mm-hmm. I am in position, and all I want to do is to hit you for six, not four. I was amazed. And then, you know, I asked a few of our batsmen about it. And quite frankly, they didn't know about it, you know. So that having Sobers in the dressing room, or even having him at home and giving youngsters a few lessons, I'm telling you, it will change their life. There's no doubt about that.
Oh! And again, the middle stump. Again has erupted.
This is just an aside, but back in those days, 50s, 60s, How were fast bowlers measured in terms of clocking? Because I heard you said you were probably the fastest bowler in the world then. How would you perhaps, or how would people have known how quickly you were clocking?
Well, they did it in the 60s, but it was an antiquated method. They had to dig a big hole in the pitch. And as the ball went over there, they then assumed that you bowl X, Y miles.
Yeah.
But I think what I would like to see, with all this technology, it boggles my mind that nobody can really stand out and look at a film and try and have the technology to say how fast it was. I tell you why. You know, when I see guys bowling now and they tell me it's 90 or 92,
yeah,
and the wicketkeeper's keeping it, catching it by his knee, I just wonder what would be the mileage to Charlie Griffith, Roy Gilchrist, myself. You know what I mean? So even though we cannot do anything about it now, I mean, say David Murray and when the West Indies have this, you know, they have about 10 fast bowlers in the 50s, in the 60s, the 70s, yeah, 75s, no, it's from the... I'm talking about Andy Roberts, Michael Holing, Malcolm Marshall, Jewel Garner, you know, Croft and those guys. The ball was always taken nearly above here. Now I see fellas catching the ball by knee and they say it's 90 miles an hour. So I just wonder, you know, if, you know, what will happen if we could get some technology that could look at a film and see, you know, do what they have to do, and to see what the mileage would be. But in the olden days, it was an antiquated mechanism, whereby it was a big hole in the pitch, and you go over there. The ball is faster, as you know, through the air than coming off the ground. So that's why that's how they did it. But I would think that what is so important, not one fast bowler or maybe two, but if you have four, you know, some of those fellas have to get two wickets early and maybe get another two to ever get six or seven in the innings, because they have four good fast bowlers. The minute the replacement get on, they'll be looking to get two or three wickets too.
Yeah.
So I think that, but so Gary Sobers, to tell you the truth, he was, would you believe that at times Gary can bowl as fast as anybody else?
Really?
Yeah.
It's out. Good catch. Fine catch. Clive Lloyd and Sobers getting the breakthrough this morning for the West Indies.
You see, he was a great swinger. And I remember we were playing, I think about Leeds, and in the second innings, he came to me and says, Blues, I'll tell the captain that I want to bowl from your end, just one over. I said, one over? He said, yes, I only want one over at Boycott. He's been giving us trouble. I think I could deal with him. I said, okay, take my end. Don't ask Griff. but you could take my end. Gary bowled three outswingers and one big in swinger and had Boycott, you know, in real trouble. Out, LBW. And, you know, he's done that about three or four times in his career with me.
Oh, and he's gone too. He also has given himself out like Brian Burles. And Sobers has taken 2 for 9.
When did he call you Blues?
Blues after my father. My father was a boxer. He was Dynamite Blues. But at Carmen Mary, he used to call me Bar Jesus. And after that, Blues. I tell you why. Bar Jesus was a man in the Acts of the Apostles. If I may say so, I like the scripture. And Acts of the Apostles was a man called Elymas, and he was a sorcerer. And he was very good at, you know, doing things, but he really wanted to get the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and he wanted to buy it. And the boys had to fix him up, not giving it, but, you know, telling him, rebuking him. And so they gave us three context questions at Connemara, And the boys, I think that the boys did not really study it well. And I got good marks, and nobody else seemed to have done very well. So the fellas say, well, if you're the only boy that got the marks, you must be Bar Jesus. They were looking for, you know, so they called me Bar Jesus from the first form to the fourth. Right. When I got to the fourth, when you get to the fourth at Common Mary, you know what I mean? You soon going into the fifth, so you get a little serious with your life. And I told those guys, I said, look, let me tell you all something. You call me Bar Jesus, but do you really know what Bar means? And they said, no. I said, well, Bar means son of. You know when Jesus said Bar Jonah to Peter? It means the son of Jonah. Right. So you're calling me the son of Jesus. I don't think that is so. He's my brother, but not my father, you see. So they said, okay, then we'll call you Blues after your own father. And that's the real reason why they did it. But the same Sobers, Seymour and Cammy, and all those fellas have told many stories about my father as a boxer. So they were very familiar with Blues. So they always called me Blues. Rod Branca, you know, Peter Lashley, all the boys that went to Common Mare and boys who played in our time would call me Blues.
And here's Locke's first ball from Hall. And a bit! Locked in with the first ball, middle stump, and the crowd are going mad.
So as you speak quite a lot about Australia and when you played cricket in Australia, you seem to have a little liking for Australia. Was that one of your favourite places to play? No, I mean, yes, England, but Australia seemed to be a sweet spot of yours.
Well, yeah, I think if I had to live somewhere else, it would be not only saying Australia, it would be Brisbane. Brisbane because the weather would be good. I mean, in Australia, as you know, it'll be June, July, August. It'll be their winter. And down south, it would be very, very, very cold. But Brisbane in the north, you know, is quite like Barbados. So I think that, I love Australia. I think that the crowds in Australia were very good to West Indians. They receive our player with approbation. And therefore, that is the country that I love to play cricket in. And then I also, not only did I have two tours there, but I went and played for Queensland for two years. And then I went to captain in Sydney. So I love Australia.
Meketh is run out, and the match has finished in a tie. The first in Test history, and a fitting end to one of the greatest Test matches of all.
Now, you talk about the tie Test, and I was going to come to that next. A special moment in history. I warned that when you watch back the videos, you will always see the presence of Wes Hall. Take me back to that tie Test and what it was really like.
Well, I don't know. The first thing with the tie Test is that they got a big score. I don't remember his name now. He got 181. Got 181 again. They got 500, and we went in and we got 400. And we learned that very clearly because I had none for 100.
a
baptism of fire. And then with about the third new ball, I then ended up by getting 540 or something like that. So I was pretty pleased with that comeback. And then in our innings, I got 50, and I used to tell the boys, look, if you want the captain to push you further up the batting order, you need to have a big stance with him. So going to England in 1957, during the trials, Alexander and I put on 150 or something like that. I think we got 77 while we were going up. And then with this, in the tie test, I told them, about it, they said, no, Alexander is no longer captain. You know, Frank had taken over, so Frank, you know. And then I said, well, that is all. Well, then, Frank was, in 1962, we were playing in Trinidad, and when I went out, he said, look, I need another 100 runs, and I wish you to stay with me. I said, okay. You know, because we never practiced carrying and never practiced in the nets and all that. We bowl that players to get them accustomed to pace. And when I got into the 30s, I hit three, more than that, about 38 or so. I hit three consecutive fours.
Another four to Hall. 17 runs off the over. A high pitch of excitement as Hall needs one more for his 50. Wesley Hall, 50 runs in 65 minutes, and they're loving every minute.
And he walked down to wicket, and he said, Winfield, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to make me look, small? I said, no, sir. I'm just trying to tell you that you must be aware that there are four W's in this in the West Indies. World, Weeks, Walcott, and Legs. And he did so. Skipper, I declare. He declared immediately at $50.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with Barry Wilkinson in conversation with the West Indies legend, Sir Wes Hall.
Getting back to the tight test, they went back in and we went back in the second inning, and just after lunch, we gave them about 300 and about 240 or so to win. And I got lucky. I got four wickets early, and they were in trouble. And they lost four wickets, and then the other two, they lost another two. So Benno and Davison, they came and moved the score. I mean, they moved it from defeat to really victory. And in the second last over of the innings, Sir Gary, he bowled it, and Joe Solomon ran Davison out.
Sobers the bowler. Benno plays the ball to mid-wicket. They start down the pitch, and Davison is run out by a magnificent return from Solomon.
And then it was the last over. You'll have to remember that there was eight ball overs, huh? So if you bowl two no balls, you have to bowl ten. That was really ridiculous, yeah. So, you know, the first ball, I bowled a very fast ball to Grout, and he missed it, hit him in the groin. He was in real trouble. And he couldn't run, or he thought he wouldn't be able to run, but Benno wanted to get them to they had to get six runs in eight balls. Nowadays, that would be easy.
Yes.
But in the old days, that wasn't easy at all.
No.
So Benno was down there like a flash, and Wally, since the ball hit him and dropped, you know, by the time the wicketkeeper or any of the slips got there, he was able to, you know, limp to the other end. And then Sir Gary told me, Sir Frank said to me that, he said, well, you know, Benno will be trying to get a four early, because if you want six runs in eight balls, if you can get a four early, well, home and dry. Yeah. He said, so don't bowl no ball, huh? So I said, okay, Skipper, I wouldn't bowl no ball. But I had this thing that if I, in the middle of my run, if my balance is good, fast bowling is all about balance, yeah, and flow. So if I am, and I'm running from 36 yards, and if I get to the 18 yard mark, you know, I will, and I feel good, it is going to be short. There is no doubt about it. I'm not going up. If you want to drive, you just buy a car. So that's it. And I bowled a bumper, and he was a little bit late with the shot. Surprise, I suppose. And so he saw Frank talking to me, so he probably said what Frank was telling me. He's a good captain. He would know what captains would do. But he really got here and took the edge, and Alexander caught it very high.
Benno snicks and he's out, caught by Alexander. The eighth Australian wicket has fallen, and either side can still win the match.
So, you know, I was excited, and I ran back to the skipper. Skipper, we got him, you know, great stuff. And he was very serious. He said, what did I tell you? I said, I can't remember. He said, if that ball had hit half an inch up the bat, where would it have gone? I said, overslip. For what? I said, 4 or 6. So, you know, he was upset with me. And then as I walked back now, I thought that, but here am I, having got a wicket, and the captain is annoyed with me for disobeying him. And, you know, I think it was McKiff who came in, and then the third ball went down, the leg side and to mid off, and then the next one went down the leg side, and Grote now was getting a little anxious, so he ran down to the batting end. So by then World had to come over again to make sure that I was okay, you know, because he knew I was upset, and he told me, okay, just keep it there. And the next ball, I bowled it right up, because I don't want to bowl a bounce or anything like that. And I bowled it up, and it caught him by surprise, and he scooped it, like, and the ball went to square leg. Would you believe that I saw the knock? I did not see anybody going for it, but Ken, I was there waiting for it for nearly 10 seconds or something, just waiting like that. And when I got there, my elbow hit his head and knocked the ball out.
Four runs to win. Grout swings, the ball goes high in the air. Paul races across and he drops the ball. A bad fielding error, and Australia needs three runs to win.
And then I had to run behind it. And Ken, I told me something that was not complimentary to my mother nor father. So I said, that's okay. And then the next ball, now, you have two more balls. Now, I can bowl a bouncer at Klein, but I never in my life bowled a bouncer at a tail ender. I've seen so many people hurt, great batsmen hurt, broken fingers, you know, in the head and things like that. So I said, not me. So I did not bowl any bouncer. And the seventh ball, Frank, he said to me, well, if you bowl a no ball now, you will never be able to go back to Barbados. They would not let you come into that island. Yeah. I said, I think you're right. So I planted my foot a good 6 inches behind the crease, yeah, and delivered the ball. And he hit it backward. He was at square, and Frank sent him backward or square. And he apparently he didn't see that. When the ball hit the inner edge and went to his right hand, he picked up the ball with seeing only one stump, and he knocked it out of the ground. It was amazing.
The scores are tied. One wicket left. Paul bowling the seventh ball to Klein. Metcalf is run out, and the match has finished in a tie. The first in Test history, and a fitting end to one of the greatest Test matches of all.
I don't know if I've got it all right, but that's about it. But it's what, 60 years ago?
Still to come on the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, Sir Wes Hall talks about the biggest regret of his career.
The biggest disappointment in my career, my Test career, is that I never got any wickets at Kensington. I don't understand it.
This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and our exclusive interview with the West Indies legend, Sir Wes Hall.
Oh, and he's caught by Servers at second slip. Truman is out. Caught Servers bowled Hall for 5 and England are 196 for 7, and how delighted the crowd are.
Oh! And again the middle stump run out, and the crowd again has erupted.
Let's come home now, back to Barbados, Kensington Oval, Sir Wes Hall, a place that you love, a place that means a lot to you for several reasons. It's your home. What was it like playing cricket at Kensington Oval?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Barry, I'm sorry you asked me that question because the biggest disappointment in my career, my test career, is that I never got any wickets at Kensington. I don't understand it. Even when I got 28 or something like that against India, I only got 3 at Barbados. That was the day my mother, the first and last time she saw me, actually. She just wanted to see, and I got 3 wickets. But I played 4 tests at Kensington and only got 9 wickets. Mm. I don't know what happened, Barry. I mean, you get very innocuous wickets like Border and you know, all the others in England. I would say only Lords and the Oval. In India, only Calcutta. And, you know, in Australia, to be honest with you, they railed fast wicket was out west at Perth, but they didn't play test cricket then. So you play two tests at Melbourne, where that is innocuous too. So I don't think I've played on many fast wickets, and Barbados in that time wasn't a fast wicket. And not that you want a fast wicket to get wickets always, I mean, but the point is you need a little help. For instance, Jamaica always gave you a lot of help. Trinidad would give you a lot of help. But Barbados, to me, I didn't mind it being innocuous, but I still figure if the wicket is like that, I should still get a few wickets, you know. But I don't know if it is the fact that I came on the scene completely unknown. As you know, I was a wicket. Your father know that I was a wicket-keeper batsman at Combe Mere. And, you know, I couldn't get in the Combe Mere side. And Mr. Hughes told me, well, look, you don't look like you can bowl, you can field. And I'm going to give you a book called Behind the Stamps by the Kent wicketkeeper Godfrey Evans. And next year you'll open the batting and keep wicket. And just like that, I found myself the next year keeping wicket for Combe Mere. And the first ball that Frank King divested in fast bowler, as you know, he was our curator. I was there to catch it, and it was so fast, I only realized what happened when it hit me in my chest and knocked me down. I think so. I was a wicketkeeper.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with Barry Wilkinson in conversation with the West Indies legend, Sir Wes Hall.
I went to Cape Town Wireless and was a wicketkeeper. And then a gentleman called Sonny, I wrote about that in my book that I'm writing now. He asked me to just, you know, the fast bowler didn't come, fellow named Robert Mears, your father would have played with him, Tony Mears' brother, and he did not, he was working from 7 to 3, and he couldn't get off, and he was coming at 3 o'clock, so I respected Mr. Jiltz so much that I took off the pads, and I bowled, and got. That day, I never bowled a ball in my life in a match. I never bowled at Carmel, I never bowled a ball in a match. I got 7 for 25.
Wow.
And I never kept wicket again until I went back to Cape Town, I was about 15 years old, to keep wicket again. So that, you know, Kensington, I suppose it was me. It was here was this young fella that nobody knew he was a bowler. Everybody knew that I was a wicket. Then they told Sir Everton that I was bowling. He said, no, where's the wicketkeeper? And he was very good to me after that, getting me into the teams and things like that, and encouraging me. So I would say Kensington, I love Kensington. I mean, I'm not the North End really, but I bowl from the South, and I love Kensington. But I regret, you know, to say that success eluded me. And I was very sorry. I felt as if something was missing. I was waiting for the day when I would get 4 wickets in an innings or something like that. But you get it all over the world. you know. And yet, when I come to Kensington, I just couldn't, I just didn't get a wicket. 9 wickets in 4 games. That's not too productive. But I felt that I just didn't, I just was so upset, so worried that I had let the people down. You know, I mean, if you play 3-4-4 tests and you're one of the top bowlers, well, you know, you need to do well. Had I played all my matches at Kensington, I think I got dropped in 3 or 4. But still, I love Kensington. I really, I got an 88 once with Tony King. I mean, we put on a big score with Tony King against India. And I love Kensington name because I got runs. But as far as bowling is concerned, I think I must have got 6. I think got 6 for 34 playing for Barbados against, I think, Guyana. Maybe, I don't remember, but it's, I think I had once for Barbados. But as for the West Indies, I just didn't make it. Not at Kensington Oval. It's one of the few grounds that I, you know, didn't pick up a few runs. At every ground in the world is not going to be productive for you. But I mean, you should still be able to pick up the odd 3 or 4, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I'm not worried about it. I just left Kensington, but I just felt that I let the people down.
Ball into Edridge. Edridge's first ball.
Oh, and he's caught by Servers at second slip.
Another 4 to Hall. 17 runs off the over.
I didn't know you were writing the book. What's the book called?
Well, the book is called I Answer the Call. And then, you know, cricket, politics, and religion have been a vinculum of my life. And therefore, I felt that I needed to speak about that. I mean, I had 15 years in cricket, but I'm 83 now. So obviously, you have to always look at cricket, life after cricket. And so I've written because I felt that, you know, you had C.R.L. James, you had Michael Manley, Tony Kojar, Sir Hilary Beckles, and the doyen of them all from Trinidad, C.R.L. James. Okay? Now, players that are now playing or players who have played in my era need to add to that literature. It is the best literature in the world, believe you me. The men that I call C.R.L. James, Sir Harry Beckles, Tony Kojar, Michael Manley. That literature, cricket literature, is the best in the world. And I feel I should add to it. I did Pierce Like Fire. Pierce Like Fire was Test cricket from 1957 to 1966. So this one is the cause that I had, a call to go in the Senate as an independent sketch center, as an independent, 1961, I was only 32. I'd come back to Barbados in 1971. I just come back to Barbados at Christmas, on Christmas 1970. And I had to go, I did that. Then another call from Excellency Errol Barra to go into elective politics, mm-hmm. right? Then I had a call from Mr. Ian Clark and the DJ Leacock to work at banks, right? Then I had another call from London to go back at Commonwealth, to go back to Cable and Wireless. Then went on the management team in Bridgetown there in the office, the regional office. And then when I was in Trinidad, I had a call for Serval, Service Volunteer for All. I mean, that wonderful, fantastic group that are doing great work in Trinidad, all it now. So there are about 12 calls Of course, the call.
They also work for
the Sandals. Well, yes. Funny enough, when I came up from politics, funny enough, I mean, you're not working, and you resign from the cabinet, and you're not working. And then Butcher call. It's a call, a welcome call, but a call, you know. And that was another one. And then, take for instance, to manage the West Indies team, that was a call. I didn't apply for the job. I mean, they asked me, you know. And also, the greatest call of all, it would come out, would be a skion of being giving your life to God, and that's a call. And then when you when you become a reverend, then that is another call. So there are about 12 calls. Yeah.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with Barry Wilkinson in conversation with the West Indies legend Sir Wes Hall.
I mean, it's a story of what I've done in my life, and it was cricket. It was I work at three of the best companies in Barbados, really. I work at Banks Breweries, I work at Cable and Wireless, and management, and then with Banks. I worked with Butch Stewart for 7 years, so that it's something that it's a good story to tell, I believe. And I think that people would probably read it. I don't know, but I think that all the young players that are playing now, and the ones who've retired for a few years, maybe we've got a cadre of great players, and they haven't written anything.
Yes.
You know what I mean? This is you have Sir Gary Sobers. Written two or three very good books, you know. Sir Everton Leakes, this one, the Mastering the Craft, written with Sir Hilary Beckles. And, you know, it's something, Barry, that is good. I mean, you take, for instance, the professor, the Right Honourable Owen Arthur. He said an amazing thing about Sir Everton Leakes. So this book, is required reading. You know, it's required reading. And he said that, in many ways, he said that Sir Everton proved to the world that true excellence cannot be constrained by social barriers. That's amazing. And he said that he changed Barbados, helped to change Barbados forever, you know, by just that, by proving that the true excellence cannot be constrained by social barriers. And I think that is one of the most wonderful quotes, and coming from a man who was sprung like I was. And I'm not too sure about you, but your father was sprung from the proletariat. And it is something that is so true, because I reckon that about 90% of cricketers of my time, you know, about now, were from the proletariat. And that we will have Sir Everton, God rest him in his grave. You can get that said by someone of the quality of His Excellency Owen Arthur about Everton Leakes. I think that is fantastic. So a lot has been said about the Sir Frank World. Lots have been said about Sir Clyde Walcott. You know, imagine the first black man to be the president of the ICC. Now that's big, you see? So I think that we're getting somewhere, but I believe that the young ones now that are coming along need to sort of understand, you know, what has happened.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with Barry Wilkinson in conversation with the West Indies legend, Sir Wes Hall.
And you look at, when you look at Sir Garfield Sobers, I mean, he's such a great player. I cannot tell you how great a player he was.
Magnificent shot, and that's four runs. There's his 250, Gary Sobers. 253 not out.
I just figured that with all the coaches in the world that you see in teams and things like that, believe you me, Barry, half an hour with Sir Garfield Sobers will solve a lot of problems. And you better believe what I said to you. I mean, I don't want to say anything more than that because people would think that you are, you know, being facetious or something. But no, I'm only saying to you that half an hour with Sir Garfield Sobers will solve a lot of problems with our youngsters. I watched them in England here the other day, and I see what's the position. I mean, you get into the one-day game and things like that. Who are the one-day, who are the most prolific scorers in the one-day? Not the fellas that hit sixes, but the captain of India.
Brett Coley makes room. Over big wicket. Oh, that's a big one. The biggest six of the night.
Yeah, it's the captain, the ex-captain of Australia.
That's a glorious shot down the ground. Gee whiz, Steve Smith. How well is this man batting?
Yeah, Steve Smith, the captain of England.
Joe Root is throwing himself this time for Pretorius. That ball is going, 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 gone. Root.
They are great players, you know. They're not. You see what I mean? And therefore, the last thing I want to say is that what would have happened if the W's were playing one-day cricket? They get a lot of runs. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be hitting sixes, you know. Although with these bats, no, I think, you know, the ball will go a long way. But you need to be able. This is the last thing I'm going to say. You need to be able, really, to, you have to adapt to strange conditions. I mean, if you're going to play in England and you don't be able to play the swinging ball, you don't have to go. If you're going to India and you can't play the turning ball, it don't make sense in going. If you're going to Australia and you can't play the ball on top of the bounce, well, then you shouldn't go. You see what I mean? So you need, therefore, to adapt to the world-changing conditions wherever you go. And if our boys do that, you know, for the cricket now is going to be shorter, as you know. Yeah. You know, you're not going to play many tests, five match tests. So you can play a lot of one days and things like that. So and then, what is the way it has gone now? It looks to me that if you are a batsman who can get 50 in five overs, you will make four times the money as a fellow who's a great batsman in the Test cricket.
Yes.
You know, because you're going to get a lot of one day cricket. I mean, I saw in the paper the other day that the Barbados captain and Trinidad player. He's a good captain, and he's also a very big power. Yeah, he played 500 2020s. 520, and he has not played one one for Barbados, for West Virginia. That no, for West Indies,
for West Indies.
Yeah. So, you know, my position is, you know, like horse racing, and. I find there is nothing that says that an accomplished batsman cannot play 2020 or anything. You need to adapt, okay? You look, if you have the best five furlong horse in the world, he win a five furlong or six, but he's not going to win a mile and a half. But a mile and a half horse could come and run five furlongs because that's they do that when they're trained. They do a thing called breathing. So that what I'm saying is that we need to adapt to strange conditions and do that quickly. You see, if you don't do that, you know, you're in trouble.
Our thanks to both Barry Wilkinson and the West Indies legend Sir Wes Hall for their time over the last hour. If you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can download the Following On podcast, available from all good app providers. The big names keep on coming, as next week we bring you an exclusive interview between Neil Manthorpe and the South African legend Jack Callis. And as always, the IPL show with Andrew McKenna returns here on TalkSport 2 every Monday from 1 p.m. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.